Hello, good afternoon, and welcome to Zero Hour, today's episode of Resounding Echoes. If you talk of technique, then the listener finds you faultless, cold as a calculator, like some sort of mathematician who has strayed into the fine arts. It's not that it worries me much, but I don't like the idea that people could think of my music as an algebra problem, nor that it could be listened to with such a preconception. On the other hand, if you speak about the feelings that stimulated you during the composing, this gives the unfortunate impression of trying to gain the sympathy of unrepentant romantics, of those who think that a work of art falls from the sky, ready cooked on your plate in a spasm of voluptuousness. To be honest, all of that is in the composition. There is voluptuousness and much anxiety. There are gifts from heaven and problems solved with difficulty, note by note, using all one's intelligence. There is also a sort of mathematics sui generis, where values are replaced by notes and functions by tonal relations. But the fundamental difference between music and mathematics is that the achievement in music is beauty, whereas in mathematics it is truth. Mathematical truth is unquestionable. It is inevitable. Beauty, this sort of artistic truth, must be convincing. The only proof of success for an artist is the judgment of his or her own sensitivity, the adherence of his or her inner sense. These are words written by Franck Martin in relation to his oratorio La Vingt Rebe, which he wrote during the first years of the Second World War. It is his retelling of the well-known tale of Tristan and Isolde, based on the novel of Joseph Bédier, and thus not on the same source as Richard Wagner's more famous rendition. Indeed, Martin's version, scored as it is for a mere 12 voices and 8 instrumentalists, with its focus more on destiny and death than desire, makes Wagner's treatment seem positively pornographic in comparison. Last week, I spoke about the struggle that all composers go through in trying to find their own voice. It is telling that although Franck Martin had composed many excellent works before La Vingt Rebe, and he was 50 years old when he completed its composition, he felt that only with this work had he composed something in which he had truly found his own voice. From the profane to something somewhat more sacred. When the British and French gave Hitler carte blanche in Czechoslovakia in 1938, and thus the belief that the world was his for the taking, in what is known as the Munich Agreement, an agreement in the age-old tradition in which those condemned to suffer the burden of such diplomacy are never part of the agreement, Bohuslav Martinů was living in Paris as he had been for the previous 15 years. When Hitler predictably and rapidly made a total mockery of the Munich Agreement and invaded Poland, Martinoux volunteered for a Czech unit organized by the French army. He was almost 50 at this time and so was turned down, but he contributed the best way he knew how, not with his sword, but with his pen and pencil. He composed a mass, but being Martinoux, it had to be quite unique. Not the least of its idiosyncrasies is that it was composed to be performed out in the fields, not inside a church. And he asked Jiří Mucha, the son of Alphonse, the man who had done so much to create the image of Art Nouveau, to create a text which strays far from the traditional one used in any mass I ever attended. One of the deluded present in Munich in 1938 was Benito Mussolini, likewise not Czech. Our next piece comes from the first of a trilogy of prisoner songs from across the ages, set to music by one of Mussolini's protesting subjects. It is a mark of the total indifference of the universe to anything that happens on a merely human level, that even in the midst of dictatorship, war, invasion, occupation, hunger, and genocide, winter will turn to spring.
C'est le joli printemps qui fait sortir les filles. C'est le joli printemps qui fait briller le temps. J'y vais à la fontaine. C'est le joli printemps. Trouver celle qui m'aime, celle que je.
For years I was tormented by guilt at having left the country for which I'd fought. I left my friends. Some were in prison, others were dead, some managed to escape. I felt I was in debt to them and that I had to repay that debt, and I felt I had a mission. I had to do something important to regain the right to live. It wasn't just a question of music. It was something much more significant. Words spoken by Yanis Xenakis, who in 1944, whilst fighting British tanks imposing martial law in his country, lost his left eye. As a left-wing militant in the ensuing civil war, this Cyclops escaped Greece in fear of his life. Only returning 30 years later. The Civil War came to an end with the defeat of the left in the summer of 1949, a matter of days before the unexpected death at the age of 45 of Xenakis's older and greatest musical compatriot. I am going to finish today with an elegy written by a young Englishman. For whom or for what, if anyone or anything it was written, I am not going to speculate. The details are, or soon will be, below, for those who have a mind and a heart to investigate further. As the world reached what in some circles was referred to as Stunde Null, 0 hour, there were no shortage of reasons for feeling elegiac. With that spasm of voluptuousness, I come to 1945 in my adventure through the lesser-known music of the 20th century. And as such, I think it is an appropriate time for me to take a rest. So until next time, thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.